Nobius Nutrition over-whipped our meringue, and we're not mad about it.
This is a one-hour food fight against diet culture and nutrition misinformation.
Instead, we're passionate about celebrating real wellness.
I'm registered dietitian Hannah McGee.
And I'm neuroscience PhD student Tarek Youssef, and this is No BS Nutrition. Okay, now we're recording.
Hello!
We're coming to you live in stereo.
Live in stereo.
From across the desk.
We're looking at each other face to face.
I'm soulfully gazing into Hannah's eyes.
We are literally staring at each other in the eyes right now. Not through the computer screen. We are here in person. Hallelujah.
Tens of people are screaming we're together again.
Yeah.
And we're just as excited as you are.
Yeah.
Hannah, welcome to the province. On behalf of Nova Scotia, welcome to the province.
Thank you so much. I'm so happy that...
Our national program that we record is now happening in one location.
Yep, one location. Halifax, Nova Scotia, where it all began.
Yeah.
I don't know if we talked about this before, but did you see, like, the memes about the Atlantic bubble forming
so
and, like,
good.
New Brunswick joining and, like, because nobody wanted New Brunswick, apparently, in the Atlantic bubble.
Oh, I thought New Brunswick didn't want us.
No.
Because you folks had no cases
for a while. Well, I think initially it was, like, no one wanted Nova Scotia because you guys had it pretty bad.
Yeah.
But then with, like, the whole Campbellton thing and, like, once everything had died down, there was memes of, like, I don't know if you've seen... Have you seen... I think it's from the movie Superbad.
Okay.
With, like, McLovin when he walks into the, like, nerdy guy when he walks into the party and he's like, what's up, gangster?
Oh, I saw that. Yeah.
And that's what, like,
that's
New Brunswick
yeah.
And then there was another one from Step Brothers. Have you seen Step Brothers?
No.
Okay. So... It's not really funny. Step Brothers is like, it's funny,
Step
but
Brothers,
like...
Step Brothers, when I saw the trailer, I was like, this wasn't a movie made for me.
Right. I don't know if you would find it. But Pat says it's his favorite movie.
Okay, that says a lot.
And it's like one of the brothers riding in the car with his mom. And he's
Will
like... Yeah, Will Ferrell. And he's like...
Friend of the pod.
Friend of the pod.
He's a producer in iHeartRadio.
No
We're
way.
Actively looking at
Will.
You. Will. Pick us up.
Yeah. And he says like... I forget what the other brother's name is. But he's like... What does he say? He's like, I hope so-and-so is not going to be there. And then they, like, changed it to New Brunswick. I hope New Brunswick's not going to be there, because if he is, I'm going to drop that motherfucker.
That's so funny.
Yeah.
Maybe I should watch it. Maybe with a 2020 lens, I can ironically watch Step Brothers.
I think that you would, like, I think maybe, like, going into it knowing that it's, like, Pat's favorite movie, you would, like, just
you know
find
what?
It for
I
me.
Think, listeners of the pod, if you'd like Hannah and I to do a live stream IGTV...
Watching Step
Brothers?
Watching
Step Brothers. Maybe we can critique some diet culture. I'm sure...
Oh, there's totally... Yeah.
Maybe we can
I
do a live
culture.
Critique of Step Brothers.
Totally. Totally. That would be hilarious.
Well, that's wonderful. I'm glad you're here.
Yeah, me too.
You're in the family bubble, obviously.
Obviously.
We still want people to, you know, respect the bubbling situation.
Yeah, so... What is... Okay, in Nova Scotia, what is the bubbling situation?
In Nova Scotia, you can have gatherings of up to...
10.
50
oh, 15?
50 people now.
With no social distancing?
No, with social distancing.
What about, like... Aren't you allowed to be in, like, a
you
place with 10 people
without
it?
If they're in your bubble.
So you can have a bubble of 10 people?
I believe so.
Okay.
I'm not a politician. And I'm not talking to Hannah. I'm talking to everybody who's listening. Please go to the news.
Yeah, don't listen to us.
We record this and we have so many topics laid out. You know, I can't research my whole life before
No.
So, yeah, don't listen.
No, just because in New Brunswick, we don't have that same
right.
rule.
New
in New
Brunswick,
it's like
wide open.
You can have people in your house. Like, it's not restricted to only a certain
amount
of people.
We do live in such a different place. As opposed to, like, so, did we talk about this? Florida had 10,000 cases in one day last week. 10,000 new cases.
No, yesterday they had 11,400.
In new?
New.
In one day.
In one day.
Wow. So I'm we're obviously very privileged to be able to have the bubble laws in the way they are here, but I do worry about people not taking it seriously. Like us, I don't think we'll get to like 10,000 cases in a day, but us like having another resurgence of cases.
Yeah. I wonder, like some people I've talked to have said like, it's kind of inevitable. Like,
I feel like I'm the only person in this town who wears a mask when I go out.
Really?
Yeah.
That's really sad.
I don't see people wearing masks.
I bring my mask with me. It, I mean, if I'm going out for like a walk in my neighborhood.
Yeah.
And there's no one, like, it's not busy.
I
but
jog
if I'm
with
going,
a mask.
Oh, good for you. Because
I'm, I don't know, weird.
I don't do that. Like, when I'm jogging in Moncton on the trail at 6 a.m., there's no one there. So I'm like, I'm not going to wear my mask. But grocery store, mall, gas station, like, got my mask.
I am surprised people aren't wearing their masks.
I was pretty impressed, like, driving. We made a couple stops, like, on our way driving through to Nova Scotia. And, like, we went into a gas station. Just about everyone had a mask on, like.
Do you think one day we won't? Do you think one day we won't talk about COVID? One day.
One day. Yeah, I honestly don't know. Like, I feel like after it's over and there's a vaccine, everyone's still going to talk about it.
I also just feel like as a podcast, like, as much as we want to talk about culture, we and culture and science intersecting with health and nutrition, like it almost feels like irresponsible if we don't mention it.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, because it's so prevalent in every single day.
Yeah, that's like. Yeah. I almost feel like every time we turn on, like, we hit record, we have to be like, and we're still in the pandemic. Okay, moving on.
Yeah, exactly.
Because if we don't say anything, it's like, oh, okay. It's still happening. People are still being disproportionately affected by it.
Yep. I know.
Black communities, underserved communities elsewhere. Yeah, I don't know. It is scary.
Yeah.
But also looks like things are getting better. It feels weird
there's somewhat of a silver lining,
you know, like
right.
watching on the news, like
exactly.
other communities not being able to move on. I feel weird going out.
I feel weird gathering with people and like going out to eat and stuff like that. Yeah, when I know it does feel a little weird.
That's where my hesitation is, because I'm like, it's still happening so bad elsewhere.
Yeah. When you say elsewhere, you mean like
the States.
But at the same time, like part of that is because, like,
they're not taking care of it.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Like, it's like, their leader is a piece of shit.
Yeah.
And, like, you know, a lot of people in leadership positions there, not everyone, but...
This is actually a fact. Donald Trump is the only person who doesn't listen to this podcast. So if you want to be cool, listen to the pod.
Yeah, exactly. All right.
Yeah, maybe we should get into it.
So, Tarek, I hear you have a brain bite for
me this week. I have a little morsel of a brain bite for you.
Oh, my goodness. I'm so excited.
Okay. Well, here it is, folks. Okay. I hope you're sitting down, because this is going to hit you like a train in a really healthy way.
Amazing.
Okay. So, I found out about a research article called The Single Administration of a Chromophore Alleviates Neural Defects in Diabetic Retinopathy.
Okay.
Okay, so I found out about it.
So what's a chromophore?
Okay, we'll get into that.
Okay.
Okay. So this research article is by Malchenka and colleagues. It was just like a few weeks ago that this was published. It was published in 2020. So there's the popular press article that I found out about this research article from was by Timothy Huzar and Zia Sherrell from medicalnewstoday.com.
Okay.
And they wrote an article called Vitamin A May Help Treat Early Vision Loss in Diabetes. Okay, so and obviously we'll link to that in the show notes.
Okay.
So I thought this was a really good thing to talk about because it's the perfect intersection of nutrition,
absolutely,
dietetics, and neuroscience. And not just any old neuroscience, but the best kind of neuroscience, if I might say, vision neuroscience.
Amazing.
Which, if people don't know, that is what I study. Yep. I study visual neuroscience. I study aspects of adaptation in neural circuits, basically what happens over time after a neuron keeps receiving similar stimuli. So in my case, those stimuli would be light because I'm studying vision. And, you know, I study that in the retina, the light-sensitive portion at the back of the eye. And people might not think of the retina as brain.
Mm-mm.
They might not think of it as having to do with neuroscience. But the retina is just as much central nervous system as is the brain and the spinal cord.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, the retina is actually embryologically, developmentally developed from brain tissue.
Wow.
And it the word is evaginates, so it comes out of where the brain is developing. Okay. Comedy gold, evaginate.
All right.
And let me hit you with this one. It not only does it evaginate, but it invaginates because it forms a semicircle after it comes out of the brain. The retina is shaped like the letter C.
Right.
Yeah. Like it's kind of shaped like a half circle.
Yeah.
At the back of the eye.
Wow.
So it is technically brain tissue.
I didn't know that.
All the way in your eye.
Very cool.
Well, actually, which reminds me, legendary, still with us. Storyline. Friend of the pod, Dr. John Dowling, Harvard professor, is famously quoted. He's not a friend of the pod.
Okay. I'm a friend of... No, I was like, who is this guy?
John Dowling famously quoted as saying, the retina is the most approachable part of the brain. Because it's the part of the brain that we can, literally, without cutting into our bodies, we can see.
Right.
Because you can see it through the pupil.
Very cool.
With advanced optics, with a microscope. Okay. So, vitamin A derivatives, mm-hmm. you know, things, so vitamin A analogs or, so vitamin A is, there's no one vitamin A.
No.
There's many, many vitamin A's. So the derivatives, the things that metabolize out of different vitamin A's or the analogs, the various kinds of vitamin A's, among other things, are very necessary for visual function.
Yep.
People don't know. So sometimes people with diabetes can also develop an eye disease called diabetic retinopathy,
mm-hmm.
which I'm sure you're familiar
yes.
with. And if people listening at home, if you're not familiar with it, it's the truth.
Yeah, so it's basically like it's a side effect or an outcome of having uncontrolled or like high blood sugars
yes.
for, you know, prolonged periods of time. If you don't control your blood sugars, it can cause damage to, right, is it the nerves
so
in your eyes?
What ends up happening,
yeah.
exactly, is through increased blood sugar, blood vessels can end up degrading.
Yeah.
So this can also happen in the eye, just like anywhere else in the body. If you have diabetes, isn't always the case, but it can happen. So it can happen in the eye at the level of the retina. So this can lead to damage or death of the visual cells, the mm-hmm. retinal cells, which means that there would be vision loss.
Yep.
So you imagine, folks listening at home, if your blood vessels are degrading because blood sugar is too high, it's blocking blood vessels,
yep.
causing them to break, basically. They can't deliver oxygen and other nutrients to different parts of the body.
Yep.
Of course, one of those parts of the body can be the eye.
Mm-hmm.
And in this case, specifically the retina, the light-sensitive portion of the eye that takes in light information and translates it into electrical stimulation that
right.
our brain reads.
Yep.
Okay, so that's how you can get vision loss through diabetes.
Yep.
And in this case, that's called diabetic retinopathy.
Yeah.
So I can actually, hopefully, use my little bit of knowledge of vision here to kind of lay a little bit of groundwork for what we're about to talk about. So the retina is already kind of living it on the wild side
okay.
with respect to blood vessels.
Okay.
Okay, so our whole body obviously needs blood vessels to carry, you know, critical compounds, oxygen, like I said. And the retina does this in a really particular way, right? So there are very few blood vessels in the retina. And and not that many. There are a few in the retina, but not that many that
okay.
they can supply blood to the whole retina. So that means that the retina has to be very thin and rely on blood vessels that are only on one side of the retina. So there are a few blood vessels that penetrate through, but really most of the way that the retina gets its nutrients
yeah.
from the blood is through passive diffusion. So
okay.
from one side of the retina, there's a lot of blood vessels
yeah.
and they're kind of leaking out nutrients
okay.
to the retina. So it has to rely on this diffusion. It can't have too many blood vessels within the retina itself that actually spread through to the cells, the retinal cells, because obviously you need light to pass through the retina.
Right.
And if there's too many blood vessels, that would obstruct the incoming light.
Okay.
And it would degrade the visual signal that we need in order to make proper images.
Right.
Right. So that's kind of what I mean by the retina is living on the wild side with respect to
yeah.
blood vessels.
Yeah.
It's like there's already not that many blood vessels there.
Sure.
And they
okay.
only live
right.
on one side.
I gotcha. Yeah.
So it's a really, if the blood vessels start degrading, it's a really sensitive spot
yeah,
to have blood vessels
sure.
degrade. And that's why you end up with the effects of diabetic retinopathy with vision loss.
Yeah.
So you can imagine that everything in the eye is kind of set up just right. So even little bits of damage can be disastrous.
Okay.
Is basically what I'm trying to get at.
Yeah, yeah.
So there are various forms of treatment for diabetic retinopathy that the article cites. There's, various injections, laser treatments, some surgery that people can go about. But it's not always the case that they can undergo that surgery. And trouble with diabetic retinopathy is that you can't really cure it.
No.
Just like diabetes, we haven't reached the place where we can cure diabetes. We can only mitigate the symptoms as much as possible.
Right.
Right? Okay. So there's actually, like I said, a bunch of vitamin A's. They're all fat soluble. Hannah can tell us way more about this than I can. They're found in animal products like dairy, egg yolk, or also in plant products. Different forms. Basically, what I found is like different forms of yellow things.
Exactly.
Have vitamin A. Beta carotene, I believe, is an analog of vitamin A.
Yes, it is. Yeah.
So, whew!
Sweet potatoes, carrots.
There you go. So, one of the vitamin A compounds is called retinal. So, retinal is found in light-sensitive cells, inside the cells that very specifically detect light, inside the photoreceptors. And retinal is a chromophore.
Okay,
that's what we were talking about earlier. Chromophore. So, when stimulated by light, chromophores, and we use one chromophore in the eye, retinal, it changes shape, forcing basically a companion protein that it lives inside of to also change its conformation and start all of the various molecular activities that end up translating light into protein changes and chemical cascades and neurotransmitter messages.
Okay.
So it's thought that there's a link between diabetes and vitamin A deficiency involved in diabetic retinopathy.
Okay.
Because retinal is that critical component.
Right.
Right? So, all of what we've been talking about does indeed apply in the human condition. And we've just kind of been talking about the human aspect of this. But moving forward, we shouldn't get too ahead of ourselves with what I'm about to say, because the study that I'm specifically referencing was done in mice.
Okay.
It's kind of the early days for this
work.
So, the researchers predicted that even before there were signs of diabetic retinopathy, like signs that an ophthalmologist would sit down with their, you know, visual apparatus, their scope, ophthalmoscope, and look in the eye, maybe they wouldn't see changes to the blood vessels. These scientists predicted that there would actually be vision loss associated with vitamin A deficiency because of diabetes.
Okay.
Okay. So this would be when diabetic retinopathy would be in very early stages, undetectable to us if we were just looking at the blood vessels. So they had these mouse models of diabetes, which, you know, there's pros and cons to that.
Yeah.
And they were treated with retinal. They were given this vitamin A derivative, this chromophore. And the scientists found that there were improvements in vision. So the interest in these models of diabetes, in these mouse models of diabetes. Okay. So the interesting thing to me, though, is that they didn't assess vision behaviorally. So what they did was they used other proxy measures of visual function.
Okay.
So they used ERG, electroretinograms. So that's electrical signal given off by the retina.
Okay.
So they use different sensors to measure that electrical, those electrical waveforms. They also looked at cell death in the retina. So they cut up retina tissue, stained it for different molecular markers of cell death. They looked at that. And they also looked at oxidative stress. So basically, what people say antioxidants are good for, getting rid of damaging ROS, reactive oxygen species, basically a molecular marker of what might be an unhealthy cell.
Yep.
So they looked at all those things, and that's how they derived their conclusion that there was improvements in vision when they gave retinal to these mice.
Right.
So, but what I am curious about is that they didn't do behavioral tests on these animals. So usually, for example, if you test vision behaviorally with mice, you would set up some sort of task where there's one visual stimulus, let's say a circle, and another visual stimulus, let's say a square.
Okay.
And the circle is always associated with a food reward. So if you put them at the end of a long tunnel or something, the mouse should always choose the circle because the circle is associated with food. Mm-hmm. So that is one way. That's a very, the example I give is a very unnuanced example, but there's all kinds of nuanced visual tasks that are out there that you can use to test vision. So they didn't do any of that stuff here. So I'm kind of curious as why they didn't do that. they run out of time? Probably not. What I'm thinking is, was the vision not so bad with this deficiency in vitamin A in these mice that it didn't really affect visual outcome?
Right.
But you could kind of detect it kind of electrically, I guess, or with these other proxy measures of vision. So it makes me think of, how do we apply this in the human?
Yeah.
If we can come up with a diagnostic tool that can measure electrically the visual, I guess, power of people with diabetes, can we predict diabetic retinopathy before it happens and start and supplementing somehow very early in order to slow down the progression of diabetic retinopathy, which can, of course, be very detrimental to people's lives?
Yeah.
Anyway, I found it was interesting work. Nonetheless, brings up the important point that currently all we can do, and this is just speaking generally, is treat symptoms of diabetes, and there's currently no way to prevent or cure it.
Yeah.
Which is obviously very terrible, affects people's nutrition, affects people's daily lives, and there's all these like other terrible things that can be an outcome of diabetes aside from just insulin resistance and so on.
Yeah. Wow. That was like so much information. I just learned so much listening to you.
Oh, thank you. Well, I would say too, I wouldn't, if you're somebody with diabetes or you know somebody with diabetes, I wouldn't run out and start taking vitamin A supplements.
Yeah.
That's not the point of this at all. Definitely talk to your GP, talk to your ophthalmologist. Those are people that are going to help you with that if you have visual symptoms or things like that. But this is just an example of the way that the research is kind of trying to target this question of whether our nutrition might be associated to, very specifically, diabetic retinopathy, very early days now in this mouse model.
Right. I mean, I would say that our nutrition already does play a role in diabetic retinopathy because if your blood sugars aren't managed well, then that's what, you know, puts you at a higher risk for it. If you have your blood sugars under control, you're keeping them within the recommended ranges, then your likelihood of developing diabetic retinopathy is, you know, not as great, because those high blood sugars, that's what, I mean, I would think that's what the main causation of it, not, you know, a vitamin A deficiency, but it might contribute.
Yeah, so I think the reasoning here is that because the vasculature, because the blood vessels are so degraded, that they're not able to circulate
vitamin A to the eye. I see what you're saying.
So the deficiency is like in the eye.
So like maybe you could still be could still be eating enough, but it's not getting to your
I see what you're saying.
So because of the high blood sugar, it's damaging that pathway for the vitamin A to get through.
It's actually, I'm getting kind of, I always get ASMR when like someone makes a good point, and you're making a really good point because that's a really important part of this, is that this is not an issue of being deficient necessarily
in general.
Or malnutrition in general. This is an issue of specifically related to the eye. So of course, again, don't run out buying vitamin A specifically for this reason.
Taking vitamin A, I mean, I guess you're giving it a higher chance to, like, get through.
At this point, like, the pharmacological tools that your doctor is using are definitely going to do much more for you.
The clinical practice guidelines for diabetes, like, are set.
Stick to those.
You know, they're always being updated. Stick to those. But this is very interesting. And I just love, like, these connections between nutrition and neuroscience and vision neuroscience, like,
absolutely. You know, so I heard of a term recently, the gut eye axis. Have you heard of that?
The gut eye axis, not the gut brain axis, not the gut eye axis.
So actually, I almost thought maybe we should do an episode on it, but I thought it would be better if we got somebody who actually knows, like, not me, who actually knows what they're talking about with respect to the gut-eye axis, to come be a guest.
Okay.
And maybe, hopefully we can reach out. If you're an ophthalmologist, if you're listening, if you know about the gut-eye axis, that'd be great. Please DM us.
Yeah.
But maybe I can reach out to some ophthalmologists that I know.
Yeah.
Maybe they'd want to be on the pod.
I would love to talk about that.
I mean, that was a little brain bite for you.
I loved it.
Vitamin A is important. Awesome. And your eyes are important.
And so are your blood sugars.
And your blood sugars are important.
Your blood sugars.
Exactly.
Especially if you have diabetes.
Yeah.
All right. Wow. Yeah. Thank you so much. I really enjoyed that.
Thank you.
Learned a lot. So today, actually, I'm going to let you introduce the topic because okay, this was something that, this was your, like, I don't want to say brainchild because it's not like it was that.
It was grueling. Oh, yeah. I was struggling coming up with an idea. I was crying.
This was Tarek's idea to talk about
this
week.
I was crying.
So.
I was like carving it into wood. So something I wanted to talk about kind of. Actually, Hannah and I are recording an episode in a few days.
Yes.
Which maybe is going to touch on this.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, I'm probably so excited. Will.
I might cry.
Honestly, I'm okay with that. You know what? It would be... That's so, like... We need to bring that, like,
I know. The,
raw
that's what's missing
the
from the pod. Yeah. Us crying. Yeah. Neither of us have cried on the pod yet. Have we? No. Okay.
I don't
know.
Like, oh, wait.
Have I cried? Okay. So, what I wanted to talk about was... It kind of, in general, food skills, recipes, food making. So this is something that we've kind of alluded to before as being something really important on the podcast, but maybe we haven't talked about outright. And at least on my end of things, and Hannah knows what I've written up, is I just kind of have the ways that I approach food skills and the ways that I approach new recipes and... like cooking in general, just some things that I've benefited from in learning with respect to being in the kitchen.
Yeah.
Because again, like we talked about with on our episode that we had with
Lauren
McNeil, we talk, or often dietitians will talk about, or clinical professionals will talk about how important our nutrition is, but we don't really focus on the food skill side of things as much.
For sure, yeah.
And I do think that's really important, because I'm still learning every day.
Oh my god, it's absolutely important. We do, I mean, there are dietitians who work in, you know, different areas that, you know, in community kitchens and things like that, and in, like, grocery stores that would deal more with, like, teaching food skills and educating about those things, but definitely in, like, clinical roles and, I don't know, certain roles like that, public health, you might not necessarily be teaching about food skills.
And how much home ec do we get in schools?
Not much.
A few
weeks?
And
a lot of times it's, like, optional, too. Like,
yeah.
I don't know, when I was in school, it was, like, you had the choice to take home economics or they called it family studies.
Woodshop.
Or tech ed.
Yeah, or woodshop. Tech ed. Yeah.
Yeah, and, like, obviously... I mean, there was a huge, like,
woodshop. I went to school in the 1800s.
And, like, all the guys would take...
Woodshop,
and all the girls would take deckhead. Yeah. And the girls would take family studies, and, like... But there would be a few exceptions. Like, I took both for some reason.
I took both, too. I don't know
but,
how.
Oh, no. So, in my junior high, it was if you were in band...
I was in band.
And you took both? Wow. Yeah. Well, we were only offered, like, if you were in band, you didn't take... family studies or tech ed.
Because you're already creative enough.
Right. But if you're not
That's enough effeminate qualities for you. Now you have to really ramp it up macho style, be a dude for once, and go to tech ed.
Go to tech ed.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, they only teach you so much. And I mean, at that age as well, you only retain so much. Like, you know, you kind of have to be interested in it to actually retain something from it.
And you don't really... People don't really talk about how, like... I mean, maybe not everybody, because of... whatever, different choices, but, like, one day you might find yourself living alone, and you have to feed yourself.
Yep.
That is really scary for a lot of people.
Yeah, and I think that, I mean, that happens when people go off to university and stuff like that for the first time, and they're trying to prepare meals for themselves, like, you know, maybe after, you know, they don't have access to the meal hall, or in the later years where you don't, you're not living on campus, or things like that, and you have, like, a tight budget... And you have to figure out how to, like, cook for yourself. And it's, like, it's challenging. So, yeah, I definitely think it's something that should be talked about more. Because, yeah, you can't really have nutrition without food skills.
And this is our definitive episode of absolute 100% raw facts hitting you straight in the face with information on how we make food.
Yeah, I mean, I think both of us... I think, like, grew up around a lot of home-cooked meals.
Totally,
and
very lucky that way.
We're involved in the kitchen from a young age. But that's not the case for a lot of people. So we kind of want to, like, provide some tips if you are someone who, or you know someone who might be like, yeah, trying to learn how to cook or wanting to learn how to cook or wanting to learn how to prepare better meals or actually, like, you know, learn about piecing together ingredients or flavors and things like that because, yeah, you haven't learned it before.
People are so afraid to, I don't know how to say this. Everybody's so scared of not being perfect.
Yeah.
And not just in cooking, but just in general.
Yeah.
And I don't know what my personality is. Like, I feel like I actually am a person who cares a lot, but I also don't mind if I make a mistake.
Mm.
But so many people are so scared of being perfect all the time and everything. I'm like, no, no one is. It's okay.
Yeah.
So I don't know.
Yeah. It's like, almost like the mentality that you would rather like not do something than like do it but not do it perfectly.
Yeah. And cooking is definitely one of those things that like I still make mistakes.
Oh, or whatever. Yeah.
I've made like bad meals like not that long ago. You know what I mean? Like
100%.
I'm like, me and too. Turn to Thomas, I'm like, I get
this
it.
This was bad. Yeah. Like, sorry. Yeah. No, I know. So yeah, maybe like start us off.
Sure.
And yeah.
Okay, so
we'll go from what you wrote down and I'll add some things.
Okay, sure.
Yeah.
So one thing that I definitely benefited from is okay, so I've had experiences where I want to learn from someone in the kitchen.
Yeah.
So shout out to my friend Jess, who I love, love, love.
Jess, is this Skinny Jab Jess?
Skinny Jab Jess? Yes. Dr. Skinny Jab Jess, PhD. Jess, thank you for... So Jess doesn't work at Skinny Jab for people listening, which is kind of what it sounds like.
Yeah,
Jess was the one who led us on to Skinny Jab for that great BS of the week. So Jess and I used to have a tradition of having Saturday night meals after we went out shopping together at the market. And I'd want to get in the kitchen with Jess and learn from her and help her. But Jess now, and I do the same thing now, and at the time I didn't really understand, but Jess didn't really want me in the kitchen. She was like, you can look from the couch. And I was like, oh my God, Jess, just let me in. The other problem is, like, not only do I also find it infuriating to kind of teach somebody in the kitchen, and that's my fault.
100%.
Okay, it's not just me.
No, I feel that, yeah.
Like, if I would love for someone to be in the kitchen with me if they come and they do their own thing.
Yeah.
If they go, okay, I know what to contribute. I'm going to go to the fridge, start chopping next to you. I'm like, oh, great. Now we're on a team.
Yeah.
But if I have to hold your hand through
and
it,
you're constantly asking, like, what's next? Like, how do I do this?
And that is a disease that I suffer from being too impatient.
Sure.
That's my fault.
Yeah.
And of course, people deserve to learn, and I definitely understand that people need to be taught. But it is kind of infuriating to do,
right? I know
what
you mean. Yeah.
So then, what do I do on this... young man in the city, I'm like moved out on my own. My friend Jess refuses to let me in the kitchen. This and that. No, I love you, Jess. So what do I do? So one thing that I learned that I still stick to is I familiarized myself with a chef.
Mm.
So whether that was through YouTube or through specific recipes online, I familiarized myself with a chef, read their recipes, and I stopped kind of like looking up a random recipe and just like picking whatever I found. I familiarized myself with one chef.
You looked for that chef. I love that.
I look for that chef. And I still do go back to these same chefs. So what do I benefit from that? Different chefs have different... they make certain choices that they keep consistent throughout all their recipes.
Okay.
So you kind of develop certain skills along the way with one chef that you might not develop as much if you were kind of picking recipes at random.
Yeah.
So, for example, if a certain chef uses a certain ingredient, they might use that ingredient very often. The thing that comes to mind for me is Ina Garten, good olive oil. Good olive oil.
Yes, of course. Sorry.
And which she writes very specifically in her recipe.
Good olive oil.
And that's something that was one place where I learned, you know, good olive oil is going to, and I've talked about this on the pod before, affect the flavor, affect the texture, affect whatever in the cooking. That's something you really like. I really like. Another thing about following with one chef is you also get the consistency of like how they do their portions, for example.
Okay.
You learn over time, maybe, for example, you get very familiar with one specific recipe that's a part of a larger recipe in many different things. For example, like making a pie crust. You know what I mean?
Yeah, totally.
Refer back to this pie crust.
Yep.
I make my pie crust the same way. So then I start making my pie crust the same way. And then I can take those tools and then apply them to different
other recipes.
Right?
Yeah.
So one chef that I really like, aside from Ina Garten, is Ricardo. So Chef Ricardo is a Canadian chef. He has Ricardo Cuisine is his website. And he has a recipe for almost everything that I'm pretty sure there's a team of 100 people working for him. Sure. And he's never seen this website in his life. that is probably the truth. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
he's
totally.
Making AdSense money and he's like just living his best life.
And other people are doing the work.
And Marilyn and Carrie and Donald and Allie are all writing these recipes
Love
on
it.
His website.
Yeah.
I'm benefiting from that. But again, I do get this consistency of like, I know Ricardo, I don't know, always uses brown sugar and white sugar at the same time. So like when I go out shopping, for example, for dessert, and I know I'm making desserts and I'm low in one thing, I know I need to like pick up these things because these are ingredients that I'm going to encounter in the recipes I make for.
Right.
I don't know. It's all these like really little things that over time you kind of build up a library of knowledge for yourself of things that you expect when you go into the kitchen.
Yeah.
So that's something that I've definitely benefited from, especially like with videos and stuff like that with Ina Garten.
Yeah.
She very frequently like uses the same tools. Like she loves her food processor, for example.
Okay.
That's something that I have a $5 food processor that I got from a secondhand store, but I was going to say I invested in, but it really wasn't that much of an investment. I invested in my $5 food processor because it's something that I know Ina Garten likes.
Right.
She does her garlic and her herbs in there, you know, instead of chopping them up because
save
some time.
Changer.
You know what I mean? It's like these things that you pick up on from a certain individual.
Yeah.
And that's something that I really like.
I like that.
That's a tip I would give somebody is just pick a chef,
follow
their process.
I like that. I've never done that. I definitely, for a while there, a few years ago, really latched on to Jamie Oliver.
Oh, cool.
And like, just like loved his books and any little, I think
Naked
like,
Chef.
Just followed like his.
Why was he Naked Chef?
I don't know.
Okay.
The Naked Chef, I don't know.
Never mind. That's not a whole other
episode. I didn't love him that much. But, like, just following his Facebook page, and there'd be videos on his page every day, like, checking those out. I definitely latched onto that for a little while, but I didn't, like, that wasn't, I don't know.
That wasn't the reason.
The reason.
Yeah,
it was just
yeah.
interesting. But I do really like that suggestion. I think that's really helpful. Because you do, even just watching, whether it's chefs or cooking shows, like, you really...
Yeah.
You really pick up new techniques.
You then
and
can
new
also
ingredients
like, limit your scope. Instead of feeling like it's so overwhelming, I have to learn the breadth of how to cook.
Yeah.
You just pick one person
one,
and kind of follow what they do. That
I
was
like
nice
that.
For me.
I like that. Yeah. Very good. Okay, let me see here.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I had... So, one thing that I do... One thing that I've been working on the last little while is, like, knife skills.
And, oh, nice.
Because I never, like... In the kitchen growing up, I, you know, my mom obviously taught me how to use a knife and how to... cut certain things and cut certain things different ways, but just like
I've
you know,
only just started doing the knuckle thing.
Yeah, exactly.
Like very recently.
Yeah. And stuff like that I never learned how to do. So I find it really easy. Like YouTube is just like a
wealth of knowledge.
Wealth of knowledge. Yeah. Yeah, like you can if you want to learn how to cut something a certain way or you want to like really finely chop a certain herb or something like that, like just hit up YouTube and like I've stood there in my kitchen like with my laptop in front of me like following it exactly and and then you from there on like from that one video you have that you've gained this new skill and then you can keep doing that and
that's
keep building on
point.
It so that's something that I do and then I know there's other I mean YouTube is free if you have like cable TV or whatever cooking shows are free or I mean Netflix there's cooking shows things like that there are like I've seen subscription sites as well for like have you heard of Skillshare
we've talked about it before
oh, did we talk about
not
it before?
On the podcast
okay.
but you and I
and they have like
isn't that shocking we have conversations outside of this
right what the hell I know every time you're like we talked about it I'm like oh did we really discuss that on the podcast but Skillshare is like I think it's a monthly subscription, and I've tried it out before, and they have, like, cooking, like, skills that you can learn on Skillshare. So things like knife skills or, I don't know, cooking certain dishes or meal prepping and things like
that. I'll write
that
down to put in our thing.
Yeah.
You know, that kind of reminds me, actually, you wouldn't think of this as a website for recipes, but you just kind of jogged my my brain here. There's a website called Instructables.com. Have you been on
it? No.
So Instructables is a website that... I mean, the name kind of gives it away. It gives you very, very specific detailed instructions on how to do something, whether it's make a craft or, I don't know, change a tire or whatever. They also have recipes on it. But the recipes are written in a very unique way.
Right.
They're written in very plain language, step by step, like almost to an infuriating like amount of detail.
Yeah.
But really, it's so difficult to mess something up. So that's somewhere that I can recommend people to turn to if they want to approach something new with respect to a skill. Instructables is how I learned to cook a steak.
Oh.
So it the recipe that I followed was like, you know, it taught you all those things of like, you have to get the butter to a certain temperature.
Yeah.
And this is how you are going to get the fragrance from the garlic and whatever, the rosemary. And you have to hold the steak on all its edges in order to sear it before you go to cook it to retain the moisture. So all those things that maybe you wouldn't necessarily traditionally get from a recipe, which is going to say like 4 to 5 minutes on each side.
Yeah, yeah,
you know
what
I mean?
It doesn't tell you. Yeah, exactly.
It gave you very specific instructions.
Nice.
Yeah, so that's definitely something that I could recommend. Also, sorry, maybe this is good. It's like a bunch of different tips, but something you also jogged my memory about, you know, when I was talking about my food processor that I got from a secondhand store, often kitchen tools can be very expensive, especially appliances.
Oh yeah,
just get them used.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, why not?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, like. Secondhand stores. I was like, what is the word for that? Secondhand stores often have certain,
cast iron skillets.
Exactly.
Food processors.
Even food processors. Yeah. All that stuff. And you can also order
blenders.
If you are looking to, this is what actually I, with my blender, I really wanted a Vitamix.
Ugh,
when
me too.
Yeah. And but my parents got me one for Christmas, but it was super, like, they were super expensive. They're still super expensive, but they got, like, a refurbished one. So
that's
even, like, so kind of secondhand, like, it's been used before, but then it's been fixed up.
And it.
Yeah, exactly, for a lower price. Still not cheap, but lower price.
That's
so,
a good point.
Yeah. Something like that is really great as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Okay. What's next?
You want me to go? Okay, so one other thing that I thought maybe we could talk about is kind of talking about substitutions in recipes.
Yes.
So often someone will open up a recipe, or I'm talking about me specifically, and I'll look in my cupboard, and sometimes I have everything there, and I go, pat on the back, I'm an adult now, somehow, and I have this privilege of having everything in my pantry that I need for this recipe. And then other times, I'll look and I have maybe half the ingredients.
I know, yeah.
But I've learned to not get discouraged by that now. I really don't care anymore, because I have learned that there are substitutions that I can make for things. And the easiest thing to do often is to just type in the thing that you want and then look up substitutions.
Yeah.
I'm sure someone's written a food blog about how they substitute.
Totally.
Whatever.
With whatever.
Yeah, whatever with whatever.
Yeah.
One of the very, the common things that I've kind of written down.
Okay.
Especially with respect to baking is that eggs, one egg equals one banana.
Yeah.
Equals a tablespoon of flax seed ground up with 2 tablespoons of water.
2 to 3, yep.
Equals a tablespoon of chia seed ground up with 2 to 3 tablespoons of water.
Yes.
And that saved me so many times.
Oh, yeah. The flax egg, like, it's like my, if I don't have eggs, it's default.
You can do it with flax. You
or if I only have a couple eggs left and I don't want to use them for whatever I'm, like, baking, I'm like, flax egg.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And I grind it up in my coffee bean grinder.
Your flax?
Yeah.
Good for you. I and buy just, it already.
Oh, pre-ground.
Yeah.
Yeah, whatever. Yeah. And I just add the water and there's my egg. And often what I've learned is if I'm looking for a substitution, just look up the vegan version of what you're cooking.
Yeah.
And that'll give you an idea of something to sub for. Which also brings me to another thing about substitutions and just learning how to put recipes together in general is if you're going to, let's say you want to make like a shepherd's pie, for example, look up a few recipes, and you've never made one before. This is like, if you've just never made one before and you're kind of nervous and you're looking to make a new recipe, look up a few different recipes of that dish that you want to make. Because you'll get an idea of what are the ingredients that are staples to this that every recipe includes.
Yeah.
So they're going to include, I don't know, peas. Every single one of them has peas in it, okay? Like, I'm definitely going to need peas. Maybe one of them has a spice that you don't have in the pantry. Some people get scared, like, oh, now I can't make this recipe.
I know.
I bet you a different recipe has a completely different blend of spices that are going
to
go in.
That's happened to me before, where I'm like, oh, I don't have this one spice, like, I'm just like, it's not going to taste the same. I'm not going to make it.
And but often it's not the case that that's like, it's not set in stone. You have to make the recipe that way. Get an idea of some other recipes.
Yeah.
And we've talked about this before, pesto. I famously have previously made pesto with peanuts and kale.
I
thought it tasted fine.
Well, you thought it tasted fine, so whatever. Like, I'm not going to yuck your yum.
Don't yuck my yum.
Yeah.
So you know, I would recommend people to do that. Learn about substitutions and look up multiple recipes for the same dish when you're going to go make it for the first time. Because then you, then often what I have done, especially with respect to baking, I've combined recipes and like made something new out of what I've enjoyed.
Sure. Yeah.
You know what I mean? I've often enjoyed a substitution so much that I'm like, that I just make it this way now.
Yeah.
I don't even care that I don't have an egg because I prefer it with the
flax egg.
Or whatever. You know what I mean? Yeah.
I like that. So some substitutions that I use often that I wrote down, and I kind of use them, well, this one kind of interchangeably, like sour cream and yogurt.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know if
you've
ever done that, but like even dips and things like that, they call for sour cream. I don't buy sour cream
often.
I don't feel like I eat it that often, but I always have plain yogurt, plain Greek yogurt in the fridge. So anything that ever calls for sour cream, I just use like a, my plain yogurt or plain Greek yogurt. Recently, we made fish tacos and like the sauce for them was like sour cream based. And I just used Greek yogurt instead. My mom makes this like French onion dip for vegetables, like she is literally French onion soup mix and sour cream that she mixes together.
Oh, that's very famous. Yeah,
yeah. Is it?
I think a lot of people do that.
Okay. Yeah. Sorry, Mom. You're not.
Oh, you thought she was like...
No.
Oh, I think that's on the back of the Knorr.
Is it?
Yeah.
Oh, I had no idea.
Yeah.
I just always like literally grew up watching
but it's
my
so
mom
good.
Make that.
Yeah, yeah,
I
yeah,
love
yeah,
it.
Yeah.
But I use Greek yogurt instead, like, and it tastes the exact same. And then...
Sorry, just on that note, but just on the note of yogurt, you just reminded me, a substitution I do all the time that I actually haven't really seen, I came up with it. I'm sure someone's written about this. Idea is new.
Yeah.
But when I often don't have milk at home, I do 3/4 cup of yogurt and 1/4 cup of water.
Cool.
I do that all the time.
I've never done that.
I do that all the time.
And it works.
Yeah.
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 Cool. I'll have to try that. I've never done that. Another one that I do often, well, not often, but I don't buy buttermilk.
Okay.
I never buy buttermilk.
Oh, me neither. Yeah. Who buys buttermilk?
Who buys
just to keep
actual
it
buttermilk?
The only time you buy buttermilk is when you know ahead of time that the recipe calls for it and you happen to be in the grocery store and you happen to see buttermilk.
Yeah. But if I'm like looking for a good pancake recipe or a waffle recipe and then it says like 1 cup of buttermilk, I'm like,
See
who the hell has buttermilk? So you can make it at home.
At this point, people need to just put the substitution in the recipe because no one...
I think a lot of people do that, but... So yeah, you can add to 1 cup of milk or even non-dairy milk if you want like vegan buttermilk. 1 cup of milk or non-dairy milk with 1 tablespoon of lemon juice or vinegar.
Yeah.
And then you've got buttermilk.
Because buttermilk is there as an acid to react with the baking soda. Right? In the recipe.
I think so. Yeah.
So all you need is that acidity, which is why you add the vinegar or the lemon juice.
Yeah. Yes.
Drag me in the DMs if that's wrong.
Drag me in the DMs.
A few people actually messaged me being like, when you said O negative was the universal, I was like, I know.
You
I know.
Corrected yourself I know, like 2 seconds
no,
later.
I know. And they were like, I know you corrected yourself, but I was like,
shut up. No, I'm just kidding. Love you, everyone who sends us a DM.
One of them was my close personal friend, Joel, who was like,
oh,
good
Joel.
Thing you corrected yourself.
What else do I have? Oh, yeah. So for one thing that I've done quite often in baking, in things that call for oil, so maybe like certain muffins or things like that, it's not necessarily like, I mean, I don't know. Greek yogurt, yes. Okay, let me get into this.
We need to have a whole episode about Greek yogurt.
I know, we should keep mentioning Greek yogurt. But sometimes I don't usually substitute it entirely, but usually I'll do half of the amount of oil that it calls for, and then the rest, either applesauce or Greek yogurt. And this is like, initially it was like, obviously like a way to reduce calories. Like I read it in like a cookbook, like a diet cookbook.
Magazine.
Sure. Yeah, but it's actually, I think, at least using applesauce is like a bit of a money saver because oil is expensive. Well, like if you're using
you
good
always have
oil.
Applesauce at home?
I keep one usually unopened in the pantry.
Oh,
like,
wow.
Because they last, you know, have a long
expiry
date or whatever. And then
shelf life,
that's what I was looking for. I can't find words today. And then, I usually use it in...
Nice.
I bake a lot, so...
Money saver. That's true.
Yeah, because I find oil... I mean, oil's expensive.
You know, and I also... It's an interesting point
you're using,
you
quote-unquote, good oil.
Well, that's the thing. I only keep one oil at home, and it's always olive oil.
Yeah.
that, again, I get on sale because I can't afford it when it's regular price. Mm-hmm. And when I do baking that involves oil, I'm actually someone who's not scared of using olive oil in my baking. People say they don't like to use it because they feel like the flavor comes out too much.
I've made brownies with olive oil before, and I did not like it.
Oh,
I thought it tasted like olive oil.
But maybe I like the taste of olive oil, so I don't mind it. But that would definitely be a money saver for me.
Yeah, I just find because, like, whenever I pour into, like, a measuring cup, like, a cup of oil, I'm like...
That's a lot. Goodbye, like oil.
Yeah.
But, yeah, so all you do need is the fat, which I can see where Greek yogurt has it.
Yeah, but...
Applesauce has fat in it?
No, like, it doesn't.
Oh, it doesn't.
I don't know. I don't...
It just works.
I don't know the food texture science behind it, but it's the texture or something that, yeah, I've used it in, like, a lot of my... Not a lot, but some of my muffin recipes on my blog and things like that will have half oil, half applesauce.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah. So that's a good one. Let me see. That's most of the substitutions I have. You can also, one thing I've learned along, you know, throughout the years, if you want to kind of cut the sugar in your baking recipe, like muffins or things like that, again, unsweetened applesauce or using a mashed banana can kind of add some sweetness without... Yeah. Using sugar, but I like using sugar, so...
Yeah, when it calls for 2 cups of sugar, I'm like, yeah.
Yeah.
2 cups of sugar.
Sure.
So, something I did write down, which maybe we can... So, we're at 50 minutes now, so we can kind of start...
Oh my god, are we really? Tasty.
Yeah.
Whoa!
One thing that I have learned over time, and again, it took me a long time to develop this food skill.
Yeah.
Specifically, with respect to baking, it can be tricky to change a recipe around. Right? So, especially when we go to make substitutions, we have to be very... You kind of have to learn over time how to be careful about making those substitutions because...
Okay.
Especially, let's say, in a baking recipe which requires a rise.
Yeah.
Oftentimes, things are kind of... Things are just right in the recipe in order for something to rise. You know what I mean?
Yeah. For sure.
Or, like, to get a specific texture.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? To get a specific texture, often things are the same. So, one important thing I've learned about in baking is water content. So I was going to talk about this a little bit. So when you go to change things around, especially sugars in something that you're baking, this is kind of, you jog my memory here. Often the recipe is just right in order so that the end product isn't too soggy or isn't too dry or has the right crumb texture of whatever you're making, whatever, cake or whatever. So when you go to remove something like a sugar, whatever you replace it with, in order for you to come out with the same kind of texture, you want to make sure that the water content is going to end up being the same.
Interesting.
So, for example, one thing that I've learned is that brown sugar has more of a water content than white sugar. So when you're subbing for brown sugar, often I like the flavor of brown sugar. It has a deeper molasses-y flavor, right? And often I like that in something sweet that I'm baking because I like that kind of deeper, kind of covers your mouth differently than the sharp spike of white sugar. So when you sub white sugar for brown sugar, and I don't know, people who are saying they do that for health reasons, like, get over
okay,
it, like,
stop.
It's just sugar. Like, it tastes, if it tastes good and you're happy eating it, just be happy.
Brown sugar and white sugar, there's no difference.
The difference is that the brown sugar has been heated to caramelize and it has like a different flavor.
It's
right, I don't know, the
in your body,
someone who works
the
on
exact
sugar
same thing.
Please call and your body does the same thing. So if you are subbing for flavor, like I do sometimes, you want to be mindful of the water content so that you don't end up getting something super soggy because brown sugar has so much more water content than white sugar. So you want to learn how much to decrease maybe other liquids like milk that's going into the recipe or water or even a little bit of oil. So these are things that over time that I've learned to watch out for if I'm making a substitution. Especially with respect to baking, that you just kind of want to Google it. Don't be afraid. Say, if I'm subbing this out for this, how much should I change?
Yeah.
People have already done the math on this. You don't need to reinvent the wheel and, like, get a PhD.
For sure. Oh, yeah, it'll tell you. Just Google it. Yeah.
Figure it out. It's okay. Like, we can always change things around. But
yeah.
Especially with something that can be as finicky as baking. Just look it up.
One last thing that I just wanted to fit in before we wrap up about food skills is... One thing that, I guess, I've done it in the past and I found it helpful and I've seen a lot of people find this helpful is if you're trying to develop your food skills or cooking skills and get a little more comfortable in the kitchen, experiment with new ingredients or new foods, don't do it all at once.
Yeah.
Like, don't think you're just going to, like, gain all these skills at once and try to learn it all and do it all at once.
That's a great point.
I think picking one new food or ingredient or technique, like, per week or even per month that you want to try, and then, like, looking up recipes, looking at videos with that ingredient or with that technique, and then focusing on that for a week or whatever. So say 1 week you want to cook asparagus, like you want to learn how to prepare asparagus or whatever, or the next week it's a certain, like, noodles, rice noodles or something like that, or then it's a certain chopping technique or something like that that you want to learn, and do one thing at a time, like small steps, and then over time you're gaining all these new skills and you'll learn how to cook new foods and things like that. But it's really, I feel like it would be overwhelming to try to, like, overhaul your, like, cooking skills.
That's a really great point. And it kind of reminds me, maybe one last thing for me is, I'm somebody who has a lot of cookbooks at home.
Me too.
And I haven't opened up all of them.
Same.
Just, you know, before you go grocery shopping, open one of those books to a page, pick a recipe, and tell yourself, I'm going to make that recipe.
Yeah.
And now you're going to go, you're going to get all the ingredients that you need for it. And, you know, that'll be something new that you try and you're already prepared for
and
it.
Then,
so you don't feel overwhelmed when you go to do it if you're not prepared.
Yeah. And then usually you'll have some ingredients left over to, like, experiment with, too.
Absolutely.
Yeah. One thing as well. Sorry. We're keep going, like, one more thing. One thing that I find, if you want to try that, like, one food or something per week, definitely, like you said, like, have a recipe from a cookbook or a recipe from online or something that you want to go off of, because I've done this before, like going to the farmer's market and I just, like, see this cool ingredient that I've never used before and I'm like, oh yeah, I'm going to buy that and I'm going to use it. It'll be fun. And then I get home and it sits on my counter and then goes bad because I don't have it already picked out, like, what I'm going to use it for. So then I'm like, oh, I'll use it tomorrow. Oh, I'll figure out how to use it tomorrow. And then I don't. And then it goes bad and then it's wasted.
Right.
So I think it's, like, a good game plan to, like, have, like you said, a list from a cookbook or of ingredients. You know, you're going to make this recipe or something like that. Or, you know, you want to cook shrimp this week. That's something you've never cooked before. Look up a shrimp recipe ahead of time. So that, you know, you have your game plan kind of set out for you.
Totally.
Yeah.
Well, that's wonderful. Well, Hannah, I enjoyed our conversation about food skills. I hope some people, you know, learned something new, or maybe this is something you can share with a friend who's maybe afraid of cooking. Send them this episode. They can learn a little bit about diabetic retinopathy and food skills.
Which is amazing. In 1 hour.
In 1 hour. And which leads me to ask you, Hannah, what's been tasty for you this week?
Well, I think you know what's been tasty for me this week. What's been tasty for me is this lovely Atlantic bubble that we are now living in. So for those of you who are listening from afar, from maybe Munich.
Our friends in Munich.
Where else? I don't know. We've mentioned lots of other places in the past. But if you're listening from, you know, outside of Atlantic Canada or outside of Canada. Did we mention this last week? Our Atlantic provinces here in Canada have, like, formed their own bubble where you can travel in and out of these provinces without having to isolate for 14 days.
Right.
And they just opened that up a couple days ago. So I got to come home and see my family and see Tarek and record in person. So
what a dream.
It's been so sweet.
Yes. Yeah. That is a really lovely tasty. Mine is not as...
Oh, that's
emotional
okay.
Yours.
That's okay. That was, like, last week when yours was, like, the amazing...
Oh, the black and gold event?
Black and gold event you went to, and I was
black
like...
Gold,
and I was
sorry,
like, mango! So it's okay.
Well, my tasty this week, actually, you kind of inspired it. So remember a few weeks ago when we were talking with Lauren McNeil, RD, MPH.
Tasting to Thrive.
TastingToThrive.com. Your tasty was chopped salad.
Yes. Ugh.
I have to tell you, do you want to collab on a post? Because I have created the most amazing summer salad recipe.
No way.
And Thomas is going to kick me out of the apartment because I keep talking about my summer salad.
What is it? I need to know.
So it's a chopped salad.
Yeah.
It's a chickpea chopped salad.
Okay.
I roast the chickpeas in a blend of spices.
Good olive oil.
With good olive oil. Ina's knocking on my door. She called the cops to arrest me for not buying expensive olive oil. And so I roast chickpeas and set them aside. I chop, because nothing's better than a chopped salad.
Seriously, you have to chop those vegetables.
As we've talked about.
Yeah.
Chop.
I wish everyone could have seen us, and like, hitting our hands.
We're
not
on YouTube anymore, but we are chopping with our hands.
Yeah.
I chop spinach.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Awesome.
I add in, are you ready? Grapes.
Yum.
Shredded carrot.
Okay.
I use the food processor because nobody has time to chop. I know. Nobody has time to chop carrots. I then put the grapes, the carrots, the chickpeas on the spinach. I add chopped almonds.
Yeah.
Oh, I use a mortar and pestle.
Nice.
Because I'm from, say with me, the 1800s. I put the chopped almonds on. And then the dressing.
What's the dressing? I need to know.
Lemon juice.
Yeah.
Olive oil.
Good old
zaatar.
Oh.
Oh my gosh. I had, like, remember when I texted you, I was like, I just made a salad and my mouth is...
Yes.
I've never felt this way about food. That was it.
Oh.
And I made it since a few times.
You have to... I need to try it.
I think we should make a post.
Yeah.
It's such a good recipe.
We should share... We'll share it on the No BS Nutrition Instagram.
We'll share it on the No BS Nutrition Instagram. It is my summer salad.
Yeah.
Trademark. If you want to make summer salad and send us a... Hashtag NBSN summer salad.
Yes, we're starting a hashtag. Here we go.
You know what? You don't have to make my exact recipe, which is trademarked, and you do need to send me money every time you make summer salad. Just kidding. But make your own summer salad.
Yeah.
Send us and a hashtag NBSN summer salad.
Yeah, we
want to
see
salad.
It. Tag us. Seriously. Seriously.
But seriously, that is my tasty of the weekend.
It sounds amazing.
Thomas can't wait for me to stop talking about it because I'm obsessed with this salad.
Did he try it? He didn't like it?
No, he obviously loved it.
But he's just not obsessed. He's not on the same level.
He needs to be on the same level.
Yeah.
So that is my summer salad story.
I love
story.
That.
Hashtag SSS, summer salad story.
Beautiful.
Share your summer salad story.
We love alliteration.
So leave a review about your summer salad story and give us 5 stars.
Yeah.
That's what I have to say to you, listeners.
Amazing. All right. I was going to read a review, but I don't have my phone, so.
Oh, do we have a new review?
We do.
Oh, okay. Maybe I can quickly.
From someone I forced to leave a review.
This is what we've had to come to. You know, people, we're trying
to.
No,
I didn't have to force anyone, but like we were saying, you know, don't DM us and tell us how much you love the podcast. Leave a rating and review.
DM us after you've left a review. So here's a review from, you know, 7 days ago, a week ago. Lex_Silver says, oh, excuse me, effortlessly brilliant. Wow. With a star emoji. The three stars.
Yeah.
Love that. Hannah and Tark take the complicated out of nutrition research, thank you, and break it down in a way that's easy to digest, haha, for the general public. Little pun there from Lex_Silver. If you want to listen to some great insight from two credible professionals... There's one credible professional, which is Hannah, and then there's me, which is kind of
You're
the dog and pony side of the show. You will have to check out this podcast. You will not be disappointed that you did. And I love this. Cheers.
Thanks Alexis.
Thanks, Alexis.
Alexis Silver. Yeah, she's also a registered dietitian, so.
Well, maybe Alexis will
have to be on the pod one day. Yeah.
Well, thank you for listening, Alexis.
Yes.
I'm obsessed with your review. I'm obsessed with the digest pun that's in it.
I love it.
And we thank you for leaving a review. Alexis is getting $300 in the mail from us for leaving. That's not happening. But we'll just want to send love to Alexis and anybody else who listened to the episode. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you, guys. And have fun in the kitchen.
Have fun in the kitchen.
Keep things interesting. Don't put too much pressure on yourself, but, you know.
Practice gentle nutrition.
Yep.
You learned a little bit about vitamin A today. That's a part of gentle nutrition.
Absolutely.
And, you know, it's a step-by-step process. And hashtag NBSN summer salad.
Love it. All right. Talk to you guys next week.
Bye.